West Virginia has been ground zero for the opioid crisis, and much of it has been attributed to pill distributors intentionally dumping millions of prescription opioids into the hands of West Virginians. Charleston Gazette Mail reporter Eric Ayer won the Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on the issue in 2017. Ayer's new book, Death in Mudlick, A Coal Country Fight Against the Drug Companies That Delivered the Opioid Epidemic, begins by chronicling how one death affected a West Virginia family and details how pill distributors ignored all the warning signs of addiction in favor of profits. He spoke with reporter Eric Douglas by Zoom.
You won a Pulitzer Prize for your work investigating, and you've written, I'm sure there's some way to find out how many stories you've written, but I doubt you even know how many exact individual stories you've written. How did it all start for you?
Basically, it started with me because I was covering the state house and the legislature, and one of my duties was to cover the attorney general's office and the attorney general's race. And Patrick Morrissey won the race, and then we got a tip that his wife worked for one of these distributors that distributes opioids and other drugs called Cardinal Health, and that she was the biggest lobbyist for Cardinal Health. And then we found out that Cardinal Health had donated to Patrick Morrissey's, had helped donate for his inaugural party. Mm-hmm. And it kind of just snowballed from there, but it started with just, you know, on the ground beat reporting in the state house.
Was there any point that you ever just wanted to quit, that you figured this isn't going to go any further and I'm never going to be able to get the numbers I need or the information I need?
I mean, you always have those moments, but you just keep reporting the hell out of the story. You know, I was under a lot of pressure at one point while we were pursuing all this. Patrick Morrissey filed launched an investigation of my employer, the Gazette Mail at the time. He subpoenaed all of our financial records. He subpoenaed our, this was in 2015 when we merged with the Mail after the Charleston Gazette and the Daily Mail. And he subpoenaed the financial personnel records. So that really took our owners and management aback. They were concerned about, you know, this aggressive reporting, but at the end of the day, they let me continue, and we continued, and we won in the end.
You quote Ned Chilton in the book, and several of the reviews, both the New Yorker and the New York Times, have mentioned Ned Chilton and his sustained outrage ethic. He very strongly believed in crusading journalism. I'm sure he would be pleased with your work, but can it be sustained? Can the Gazette Mail, other reporters pick up where you've left off?
I think it's real tough. I mean, this environment has shown how tough it is on newspapers. You know, we've laid off upwards of three people the week before last, and then another two the previous month, and more cuts are coming. This is not just the Gazette Mail. This is happening all over the country.
Yeah. Is the public maintaining its level of sustained outrage over the opioid crisis or the other injustices? Are we paying attention?
Well, I think the opioid crisis, and rightfully so, probably has taken a back seat, which is something I worry about. There's 3,000 plus cases that have been filed related to opioid manufacturers and distributors, with cities and counties trying to recoup some of their expenses and their losses that they've incurred because of the opioid crisis. But there was a conference call with investment bankers, and The Intercept reported that they were talking with the investment bankers about how they were going to leverage the coronavirus outbreak to duck and dodge the responsibility for the opioid crisis.
You revealed in the book your diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. How did that influence your work?
Yeah, it gave me a new perspective. You know, I had a phrase, you got to get done what you got to get done when you can do it. In terms of the impact for my work, it's my right hand has a tremor, so it's very difficult to type with my right hand. I need to get some software or something, some speech to text software, but I'm I've been kind of stubborn about making that switch. So now I'm maneuvering everything with my left hand primarily. You know, on the flip side, it's been a blessing in terms of meeting new friends.
That's pretty much all of my questions. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
A lot of these people who are in recovery, they really, really look forward to this group therapy model where they have 12 to 15 people. People that I've interviewed who are in recovery say that's the best part of the whole process, is getting together with groups of people. Now, I guess they can do it on Zoom or something, or telemedicine, but I don't think it's the same. But then again, in these rural areas, there's 25% of people don't have high-speed broadband. They might not be able to do that. This isolation, more anxiety, more loneliness, I don't think that spells well for that's not a recipe for recovery from opioid use disorder. That's the exact opposite of it. And the opposite, you know, they say the opposite of addiction is connection, and we're not getting much connection now.
That was Eric Ayer, author of the newly released book, Death in Mudlick, a Coal Country Fight Against the Drug Companies That Delivered the Opioid Epidemic, speaking with Eric Douglas.